talking about experiencing visible objects as visible objects, and how normally there are people and things appearing, and that indicates that visible object is not being experienced as visible object. Would that be correct?
It is actually like this moment. Everything has to be like this very moment. But we can talk about whatever appears like visible object, because now it is appearing. Visible object is appearing. But there is no understanding of the true nature of visible object as it is, because there is no attention to the characteristic of visible object at all. There is always attention to what it is, whether it's things or people. But actually, visible object cannot be anything at all. It is that which can be seen, like now, just that.
But is that not because sanya always arises so quickly?
Sanya arises with each moment. It shows how fast citta arises and falls away. Even right now, when there is the idea of someone or something, it arises and falls away, uncountable. What is left is only the sign or nimitta of rupa, which has arisen and fallen away in succession.
But it's the sanya that labels things. It's the sanya that
arises with each moment.
So given that it arises each moment, how are we to maintain just bare awareness of the moment without interpreting what it is or forming a judgment about what it is? Because sanya is already doing it.
Yes, but another sanya arises with other citta again and again. Different sanyas with different cittas.
But we can't control it.
No. Just develop the understanding. It is right understanding which develops from hearing and considering about the truth or the true nature of realities, which is now appearing, one doorway at a time.
And we can't make this happen. We just have to keep hearing it said.
No one, even Buddha. No one can do anything, because in reality there is no one. Seeing is seeing. Seeing cannot be I see or anyone sees. Seeing arises, so it sees. If it does not arise, it cannot see.
But all of us are here because of this need to understand.
All of us is only a moment, from moment to moment. Seeing is seeing. When we talk about element, there is no one, only different element. The nama element or the rupa element.
On Saturday, when you were talking about doing something, for example, meditation, with the view of gaining something, you said this was lopa,
right.
And I think it was Robert said that it's chanda. But the thing is that my understanding is that chanda is also can be kusala or akusala.
Yes.
You know, when the Buddha set out on his path to become fully enlightened, is this to be understood as an impossible kind of expectation, because you can't force any conditions to arise?
He talks about realities. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, feeling, attachment, detachment, all are different realities.
But only after having attained enlightenment.
Even right now, panya develops little by little, and panya is right understanding. For example, now we are talking about visible object, and visible object is appearing. So in reality, when there is attention to visible object at that time, no thought about other thing at all, because visible object is appearing. So it's time to understand this visible object, which is now appearing, to develop the understanding that it is seen. That which can be seen is real, it's a reality. there is no one in it at all. Just that which can be seen. And after that, there are conditions for thinking a lot about what is seen. But actually, at moment of thinking, it's not the moment of seeing. That's why they can be thinking without seeing.
Oh, yeah.
So seeing is not thinking. But when it comes after one another so fast, there is the idea of something by thinking in visible object.
You see, I've forgotten because my memory is going, but in the Satipatthana Sutta, Sati Sampajanya, you know, there are four facets of it, aren't there? Something about the first question is something, doing something or saying something necessary? Is it appropriate? And then there's the question of which domain is it? And there's another one, I've forgotten what it is. But this to me sounds like a very active thing, you know, before acting or before speaking, to actively question, you know.
The question must be very precise as what is it? No matter what we are talking about, what is it? The active reality, what is that? What is it?
What you mean, the state of mind?
There must be citta, that which arises and experience an object from moment to moment, from birth to death.
And you're asking the question, what is it?
Yes.
What, do you mean what kind of citta it is, or?
It's not self. No matter what is it, it's not self. It's always a reality, the mental reality or the physical materiality reality.
I'm sorry, I think I'm really stupid, but we're sitting here because we share this common...
That is the idea of we, but actually, seeing, hearing, smelling, boil it down to a moment, just a moment, because citta cannot arise together at one time. There can be just one citta at a time. If that citta hasn't fallen away yet, there will never be other citta followed at all.
In one of your, in one of the India talks, you say that everything perceived is nimitta because it's already fallen
citta
away.
And chetasika arise together, and they have to experience same object one at a time. Like now, it's not just citta which arises and sees. There must be also chetasikas arising with citta. So no self, citta arises by conditions.
But you say that the experience is only one of nimitta because the
what is seen is nimitta, what is experienced is nimitta.
Because it's already gone.
Right, and the succession of the arising and falling away is there as nimitta. Some things stay like now. Things and people are staying right now, but actually they are all only nimittas.
You said earlier, Anjay, that you thought, well, okay, for those who are enlightened it's like this, but I think the point to stress is regardless of whether there's any understanding or no understanding, regardless of whether we've heard the Buddha's teaching or haven't heard it, there are only cittas, cetasikas and rupas. No people, no things, nothing else. That's all there ever are.
But there must be a point at which the attachment to the I just suddenly goes, yes? I mean, or does it just wear away?
I think it's nothing happens suddenly. I think it's a very gradual development. Gradual development of right understanding, which begins to understand realities as they are, cittas, cetasikas and rupas. And when the understanding develops, it becomes more and more apparent that there isn't any self, there isn't any I in it. It's just an idea, that's all.
But I know today, as I was struggling along Yarrawat, and I mean, I imagine it's the same in Hong Kong, but it's just so busy and there's so much interaction and you're having to be careful of so many things. How is it possible to maintain this awareness that there is only these moments arising, falling? When you have to act all the time, move out of the way of people and the million and other things that are going on. I just don't know how it's possible to not to be caught up in it all. I mean, it's...
That's because there's the idea of doing something and the idea of self, whereas in fact life goes on just the same, just as usual. Sati, the development of sati and panya, doesn't mean any change of action or slowing down or being busy or being quiet. It just slips in and is aware of any reality appearing at that moment.
So Yoni Somanasakara is really important in this development, yeah? I mean, that's an active doing, yeah, but to keep reflecting on this fact, to keep reminding yourself that it's just jitas and jetasikas arising and passing away.
Well, there's wise attention, Yoni Somanasakara, with whenever there is kusala, so even at moments of generosity or kindness, there is wise attention, and at moments of reflecting on the Dharma, like now, considering, then there is wise attention, and then there is wise attention with moments of right understanding of realities. So there's wise attention whenever there is kusala. But again, it's not a matter of when you say it's something active, it's not someone doing something or taking some action or purposely thinking of being aware, because otherwise it's like you mentioned Kunsuchin saying about the meditation and attachment. As soon as it's an idea of specially doing something or trying to be aware, it's not wise attention, it's attachment then.
Another question that came up before this started was how one, is this right, Bhante, how one takes the self out of the visible object.
Yeah, how do you do it?
Are we now trying to understand oneself as something like seeing and hearing, or are we now developing the understanding of the absolute realities? No self at all. Instead of thinking that who am I the seeing, the hearing, how much attachment one has, and how can I get that and this? But instead of thinking about that, what about developing the understanding about what is appearing right now, to have right understanding whether it is I or not I at all? Otherwise, there is always the idea that, oh, I know that, or it's my citta, or it's cetasika. But actually, if there is no thinking about I, but now there are moments of understanding whatever appears as it is. For example, now there is something appears to seeing. Before that is I who sees. But actually, what is it, that which is seen and the seeing? Do they belong to anyone, or do they arise by condition? And at moment of hearing, where were they just before hearing arise? Nothing. So now we are talking, developing the understanding of what is appearing now. Like hardness is hardness, it's real. Does it belong to anyone? Or is conditioned to be hard? It cannot be conditioned to be a sound. but it's conditioned to be hardness. Just that. Each reality is so real, and it does not belong to anyone. So it's wrong to take any reality for I, like seeing as I see, because seeing is only a moment conditioned. Without the I base, without the visible object, there will never be seeing, and visible object cannot appear at all. But now sound is appearing because of conditions. So when there is the understanding about realities, it begins to know that there is no self. Instead of trying to let go the idea of self without any understanding of anything which is now appearing at all.
When I was talking to Jonathan, I had an idea like the magician pulling the rabbit out of the hat, you know, taking the eye out of the, you know, of the seeing or whatever. So it has to be worn away in a way. I mean, it, naturally by itself, it has to be.
By what?
By only wisdom. By
mm-hmm. Without right understanding, it's there.
Okay. Thank you.
Talking about nimitta, I heard you referring to nimitta in terms of degrees of illusion. So, for example, when we cling to the idea of a glass of tea, there is the illusion that actually a glass of tea exists. There's a clinging to the story about the visible object making it into something. So this is a strong degree of illusion. But then there are degrees and degrees until we come to the finest sense of nimitta. When there is awareness, there is awareness of visible object, but actually it's the nimitta of visible object. When you refer to degrees of illusion, it seems there isn't any illusion there because it's with right understanding. Can you say a little more about
it? Yes, it's not the degree that it can penetrate the arising and falling away. That is the idea of it's me or it's something stay all the time.
So even if there is right understanding of visible object at that moment, or even if there is insight, vipassana jnana, but not yet the third stage of vipassana jnana, because nimitta of the object is experience, would you say it's still illusion at that moment?
At what moment?
At the moment of understanding.
No.
Yeah. So when you refer to degrees of illusion of nimitta,
there's still illusion because it's not completely eradicated.
In between, yes. Because sometimes it's suggested there are different meanings of nimitta, but actually you once said it's actually not different meanings, but degrees of illusion. So can we say both?
According to degrees of panya.
I was wondering about feeling, and I was thinking that with feeling, in that moment, there's no thinking, but then later there may be thinking about what was felt, whether it was hard or soft, maybe hot or cold. And so from that place, I wondered about thinking. Is thinking always about past or about future and not about now?
What about thinking about what is seen after seeing has completely gone?
And that's thinking.
Or thinking about nimitta when the rupa has gone from moment to moment.
But it seems that would be thinking about the past, isn't it?
As long as it appears, would we say that it's the past? It's not like yesterday.
But wouldn't that be just that moment of seeing? It's seeing, there's no thinking. Then after, when thinking comes, then you think, I saw the cup, or I saw a visible object, or I saw blue. So it would be, I would think it's past.
Is it important to know that it's past? Isn't it important to know that it's just thinking?
Yeah, I understand that, but I'm just trying to get that sense. Are we always in? Can
but
we?
It doesn't matter if we're in the past or the future or the moment. It's about understanding the reality of thinking, the characteristic of thinking, not getting caught up in a story about whether it's past or future or now.
Yeah, I don't know if it's so important, but because with feeling, with body sense, it's always now. Feeling seems to be always in the present. And then there's always that sense of thinking about what you felt, or how it might have been, how you felt before, or into the future, but never...
Is that your daily life? Thinking like that?
No, it's only when you're... Not in daily life, no.
When I look at the content of the thoughts. Can there be the understanding of whisper right now without thinking that it has gone completely, because what is left is exactly like what it was before it's left? Like whisper object right now, not the future one.
Ajahn, isn't thinking one of the Satipatthanas?
Do we have to call it or any time Satipatthana? What about the understanding?
I'm not sure I can follow that.
No need to talk about Satipatthana when there is no understanding about reality right now. It's only trying to call something, whether it is called this or that, but no understanding.
But thinking is a mind object, isn't it?
Thinking is real when it thinks. And there can be the understanding of thinking because of the limiter of thinking again.
But the content is not important.
It's not like we try to know something, not now. It's impossible to get that understanding because it's not this moment. It's only trying so hard to think and think and think. But there can never be the direct understanding by thinking like that. But now, when there is the understanding, what is appearing now is not yet known thoroughly as not self, not thing, just a reality, a Dhamma, an element. This is the point, to become used to that which is not self, that which can only be seen in this life or any life, any time in this world or anywhere.
I have a very short question. In the Patisambhada Magga, it mentions that he contemplates as dukkha, arising occurrence, and the sign, nimitta. Does it mean he understands realities as being dukkha because they arise, fall away, and have nimitta, as opposed to nibbana, which is anamita?
When there is attention to the arising and falling away, there is no such nimitta as something permanent or staying.
Right. So when he says he contemplates as dukkha, the arising, the occurrence, and the nimitta, so how does that relate?
It depends on panya at that moment, whether at what point it develops.
Understood the arising and falling away of the Dhammas. And before the third Vipassana Jnana, any understanding of impermanence of Dhammas is only as nimitta.
I think that there are nimittas most of the time, and we don't mind as long as the characteristic of that reality appears.
Just something that I think about often is that I'm sure that the insights or the levels of a stage don't just suddenly come like that, but that actually the level of wisdom has gradually built up to that understanding, and then it suddenly kind of, how we say, coagulates or comes together in a certain moment, but almost as if, you know, like the train arrives at Wallapong or the railway station, it just doesn't suddenly arrive. I mean, you know you're getting nearer to Bangkok all the time and you see the different railway stations. I mean, surely it's like that, and not just suddenly you kind of, you know, one minute you're in Chiang Mai, the next minute you're in Bangkok or something. Does that make sense to anybody?
This is why, yes. in the beginning there has to be the clear understanding of namas and rupas, of chittas, chetasikas and rupas, because otherwise there can't be any other development of understanding unless we appreciate that there are just these paramatta dhammas with no self in them.
But that requires a certain amount of, initially, some kind of blind faith or acceptance of something to start with, yeah, in order to be able to see it. But we have to accept, I mean, I have no experience of devas or anything like that, but I accept that they exist because the Buddha, you know, the Buddha's level of knowledge was so high that I accept that that's a reality, although I have no experience of it. And is it like that, that you, in order to come to see the difference between nama, rupa, and to understand that that's all there is in what we call human being or whatever, there has to be that kind of intellectual grasp before the actual panya sees for itself, no?
One has to hear quite a lot about seeing an invisible object. But then I think it's not like hearing about devas, because right at this moment it really can be tested that there is only visible objects seen, nothing else appears through the eye sense. And if there is the idea of I see, well, what is this eye? It's just a moment of thinking. So it really can be tested and proved at this moment, at whatever degree of understanding is developing, then there has to be an interest in hearing it and an interest in considering it. And this interest in hearing and considering it, this is chanda, this is kusala chanda.
But only certain parts of what the Buddha taught can be verified by us at this moment. So we have to understand what they are. And if we don't have a clear intellectual basis, if you like, for the teaching on the dhammas that arise at the present moment, then there wouldn't be any chance of beginning to directly experience or to verify anything that was taught about the nature of the present moment.
But we do need a certain amount of theoretical
explanation
before we can even begin to see. It's like a scientist working within a scientific paradigm. He has to have a paradigm before, you know, he can start experimenting or something.
That sounds to me like assumptions.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think we need any assumptions to test whether what is seen at the present moment is visible object, which is different from the seeing consciousness that experiences it, for example.
But it's the I see that the problem is. The seeing doesn't seem to present the problem, it's the fact that I see that's the problem.
Whether there's I see or not, there's still visible object, which is different from the seeing that experiences it, whether there's an I in the seeing or not.
I'd like to come back to a topic we were discussing the other day about metta and the Brahma Viharas and the order. We were talking about metta as the support and foundation for the other Brahma Viharas, and metta as accompanying Karuna and Upekkha, for example. Now, we know that metta is adosa cetasika, and adosa cetasika arises with all kusala cittas. Does this mean that whenever it is kusala citta with people as the object, there is metta there?
Can there be the opposite? like feeling bad to that
yes,
person instead.
Dosa. Yes.
When there is no dosa.
When there is no dosa.
Can
yes.
there be feeling bad?
I think whenever
to that person whom you're thinking of.
I think if there's feeling bad to that person, it's there's dosa there.
So, metta or no metta?
No metta.
But when there is metta,
no,
can there be the feeling like that?
No,
the bad
no,
feeling?
No, no, no. But my question, or because
you
of that.
You call it metta, but what about the bad feeling towards that person?
No, but my question was when it is kusala citta, when there's bad feeling, there's no kusala citta.
Mm-hmm.
So the question was, whenever there is kusala citta and the other person is the object,
mm-hmm.
can we say that it must
because
be met?
You just yeah, want to call
be.
It.
Uh-huh.
But what about the feeling and reality right then?
Yes.
See, you don't feel like that person's your enemy.
No, no. That's it's the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, because metta is just one kind of a dosa when
yes,
people are the
object.
Yes, but
you just want to call.
Yes.
But what reality is there?
The friendliness or the kindness when it isn't. So when the other Brahma Viharas arise, like Karuna, Mudita or Upekkha,
when you have compassion to anyone, do you have to think whether I have metta to that person?
No, but
it's there already.
It's there because there must be friendliness.
Yeah.
The reason I asked is because I've heard you say once before, only one Brahma Vihara at a time, but I think what you mean is that, for example, when there's Karuna, there cannot be Mudita, so this is why.
Or even there is Adosa, at that moment Karuna is there, presenting itself as Karuna, because there can be Metta without Karuna.
Right, with or without, yes. Thank you.
Are we now listening to Dhamma with expectation?
I don't know, because once you asked me last time, you said to me, why do you want to practice meditation? And I said to end suffering, and you said to me, are you suffering now? And right at that moment I wasn't, because I was answering your question. But when I went back to the monastery, my neighbour said to me, weren't you even blinking your eyes or something like that? But at the time I felt, honestly, I had no suffering, because I was just concentrating on answering your question. Now you say that, ask me that, there is still in the mind the working on doing something. I was told this morning that I should be discriminative about helping other people. I should apply wisdom, just not to help, to help people because they take advantage of you or something, but to use wisdom to discriminate. And I'm thinking now about, I saw that as metta. But now I'm beginning to question whether it was, because does metta imply that there is wisdom in what you're doing?
Is that the way to develop right understanding?
I don't know. It's trying to develop perfections, like generosity.
That is expectation again.
But how do we develop the paramis? You know, it's like we have to start somewhere, yeah?
To start or to develop or understand, just understand. Because now there are seeing and visible object, thinking, sound, hearing, all realities appearing one at a time. Should there be the understanding of them, or just neglect the true nature of realities?
But I'd still say it has to be developed.
Yes. So it's not, there's no expectation for and how and when I will know at all. It's the moment of understanding the moment of listening to the nature of reality which is now presenting itself in order to understand what is heard until there is more and more right understanding develops without I expect to have such understanding first and then I will do this or that in order to have more understanding. It's just the moment of developing understanding from hearing, and when there's understanding develops, that cannot be said when at all. Like at when one begins to learn to read, do we know when we can read? We don't know. But after developing, then we know that we can read. But we cannot pinpoint at what moment that we can. From the first on to the moment when one can read. It's like now we are talking about visible object and seeing. We cannot know when there will be more and more understanding of visible object and seeing. But then one day when it develops, there will be more understanding until it can directly seeing, understanding seeing as not self and all other realities too. And by then we don't have no doubt about what is meant by Satipatthana. But now when there is no understanding about realities and we think about the term Satipatthana, how can there be the understanding of Satipatthana? When even right now there is no understanding about realities which is now appearing.
It still seems to me to be incredibly passive. And then I think of the Avada Patimokkha, refrain from evil, do good, purify the mind. This seems to me to be something very active, and yet these things are necessary in order for mental purification to occur. It's necessary for us to avoid doing bad things, to try to develop our sila, and these are active.
But I think you have to be careful not to not see how we are conditioned throughout life. We are conditioned by environment or by our upbringing, and if we read that to do something good, if we think it is a good thing, then that will be a condition to do something good. And it doesn't mean that we actually think that we've got to develop that. It just comes about because we agree with it. And there'll be opportunities that will come along where we might have a chance to do good. There'll be other times that will come along where we won't do the good thing. So in the Pitaka, if it says things about developing wholesomeness, then if we agree with that, that can be a condition to develop wholesomeness. And if we read the Parami and we think that those are good qualities, that can condition us to do those things. It's not we do it. We don't train to do it. It just comes about because it's conditioned that way. And we are conditioned throughout our whole life by different things. And it all depends on our accumulations, whether we think that wholesomeness is a good thing. And if we think wholesomeness is a good thing, then whenever we read about wholesomeness, that will condition wholesomeness.
And how does Patimokkha relate to seeing right now? With our seeing, thinking, can there be the idea of Patimokkha?
I'd also like to relate it a little bit to the point you brought up at the end of the last session about when Bhante mentioned being disturbed by a lack of observance of the Patimokkha and a lack of respect for the Vinaya, and also there was mention about downfall of the Sasana. And I've heard you say, and I've also read, that the Sasana declines because of lack of respect for the Vinaya, but also because of lack of right understanding. And I believe they
actually amount to the same, because only through the development of right understanding will there be perfect observance of the Patimokkha.
Would you say a little more?
Without understanding, can anyone observe Patimokkha perfectly?
I suppose because the Patimokkha are rules of training, I've always held that they are the preconditions for developing right understanding. This is why I'm not confused, but it seems to be turning everything on its head, because it now seems that there must be right understanding before there can be observance of the Patimokkha.
Yes, but what's the purpose of observing Patimokkha? Why does one observe Patimokkha?
Well, for a number of reasons. One, to develop higher sila. Second one is for communal harmony. Another one is to protect the image of the sasana.
It means that one knows how much kilesa one has, so that one observes Patimokkha. Or does one not know anything about one's own kilesa at all, just observing for some result, like the vipaka, the result of good deeds? Or by seeing the very dangerous accumulation of akusala, so one see the benefit or the usefulness of observing Patimokkha as much as one can.
I can understand. That's a very good point.
Could you elaborate a bit on your rhetorical question a minute ago? What is the relationship between the Patimokkha and seeing boundaries?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When they're seeing, there's ignorance. There is attachment which relate to ill deeds. But when one sees that, yes, one knows one way is to observe Patimokkha.
So without awareness,
without understanding, it's useless to just observe. Like some people observe the 8 precepts, just for the sake of the result, to be born in heaven or something like that.
But because of the latent tendencies, it's only ever a temporary observance.
When we realize what you're saying is that when they're seeing and we see there's so much ignorance, and we see the value of the Patimokkha, therefore the value of the Patimokkha is with the same understanding that we know that how much ignorance is arising.
And one develops more understanding too, not just observing the Patimokkha.
I think this comes back to what we were discussing earlier about the necessary conditions for there to be more awareness and understanding of the present reality.
Right.
Expectation again.
It sounds like that if there is development of understanding, it sounds like then there is observance of the Patimokkha, but not necessarily that I've actually taken on precepts, but with the growth of right understanding, there is more reason why one would not commit evil deeds.
Can we say that speech and deeds come from kusala when it's Patimokkha?
Can you ask again?
Good deeds and good speech comes from wholesome citta.
Yes.
Or Patimokkha's rule must be observed by kusala citta.
Yes. Also, with the development of satipatthana, those three characteristics of all paramita dhammas, like anicca, dukkha, and anatta, with the development of satipatthana, is one of those aspects known before others?
What do you mean?
Well, it was a discussion that came out yesterday with Jill and I.
Right now, what appears? What characteristic?
Well, my thought would be that it's anatta, the fact that it's, you wouldn't know the other two unless
that's
you knew
the first jhana does not experience the arising and following.
Doesn't?
No.
Okay, and that's the anicca. So the first jnana is the knowing Ratnama from...
No one arises and falls away. There must be the absolute reality which arises and falls away.
Yes. So the answer is that it is anatta that is seen first.
Do we have to call it anatta? Or are we so used to call something before understanding it? Or by understanding it, no doubt about what term is used.
Right.
One more question on the patimokkhas and sila. We know that in the classification of the purifications, the third purification is the clear understanding of namas and rupas. But the first purification is related to sila and observance of the patimokkha. But if right understanding hasn't been developed up to the stage of Namarupa Paricheda Jnana, how can there be the first Sila Visuddhi, the first purification?
So what is meant by Visuddhi?
It must be with understanding.
Yes.
So without understanding cannot be. But in that case, is it understanding not yet of that
because
degree?
Because Sila Visuddhi will lead to Ditti Visuddhi.
Yes.
So it must be Panya.
It's the development of understanding, but not yet that development of understanding of that degree.
Anyone who observes Patimokkha with the idea of self, is it Visuddhi? Can it lead to Ditti Visuddhi?
No.
That's why it has to be Sila Visuddhi, by developing understanding until it becomes or lead to Vipassana Jnana, which is Ditti Visuddhi.
And yet, we also know that only the Sotapanna has purified Sila of the degree that...
By understanding. Reality.
So when it's referring to Sila Visuddhi as before...
With Satipatthana.
With Satipatthana. Mm-hmm. It's not that degree at all, but still it's talking about purification of Sila.
Because with Satipatthana, can there be any purification?
No. But can one say it's not the purification of the level of the Sotapanna's purification?
When there's no understanding, it's impossible to be pure.
Mm-hmm. But even if there is understanding at that level of Sila Visuddhi...
By Satipatthana. Then it will lead to...
It will lead to Ditti Visuddhi, which will
lead to other Visuddhi.
Higher ones.
Is Ditti Visuddhi... At the stage of Sotapanna?
Nama, Rupa, Paricheda, Jnana, okay. The same Vipassana Jnana you were mentioning.
So the three are in fact stages of development of Panya. Sila, Visuddhi.
Oh,
yes.
Not so just that, one, yeah. From the very beginning to the end, from the first to the seventh.
So it just happens that at the stage of Sotapanna, the precepts are perfected, the sila is perfected, and that's why it's called Sila Visuddhi.
According to whether that person is monk or just lay people?
When it refers to Sila Visuddhi in the seven stages of Visuddhi, Sila Visuddhi is the first Visuddhi, so it's understanding with Satipatthana and purification of sila, but it's not yet even Ditti Visuddhi, which is the first stage of insight. So it's a long way to go before Sotapanna. So that was my question.
We're not talking about the Sotapanna, the Anagami, and the
No.
That's a different thing.
Will the seven Visuddhis lead up to that? But the first three Visuddhis are not yet at the level of Sotapanna.
Earlier, the Venerable was talking about three reasons for keeping the Patimokkha. One was developing sila, second was for
communal
harmony, and the third was
to protect the sasana, because the Buddha was concerned that the Dharma would spread and people would have high regard and respect for the Dharma that he discovered. And so it's important to behave in ways that engender that kind of respect. So, for example, I can be walking along the road with my mother. I don't have a mother to walk along the road. But the thing is that, as far as everybody else would be concerned, they wouldn't know that that was my mother or my sister or my daughter or whatever it was, if I had a daughter. But in order to avoid people misunderstanding, you know, it's forbidden for a monk to make a journey alone with a woman. According to the Vinaya, it's possible for an arahant to break the Vinaya. For example, a monk is not allowed to lay down in the same room as a woman, but if a woman enters the room, this is a classic example, after the monk has gone to sleep and leaves before he awakes, an arahant wouldn't even know, but the offence would have been committed regardless.
Yeah, but the offence wasn't committed by him. The offence was committed by the woman.
It doesn't matter.
Something on DSG this morning reminded me about how we make excuses. Someone had been sick and had been rather irritable, and then he explained, well, he had been sick, and said, okay, it's no justification. And this reminded me in India when a friend said, oh, her, you know, husband had been irritable because he was ill, and your comment was, no excuse. Now, we know that Now we know that in a way there's no excuse, because the cause of dosa is the accumulation, and yet we all make excuses for other people or for ourselves all the time. We say, oh, okay, I had a headache, or the traffic was bad, or something happened. Can you say a little more about no excuse? Because there is a connection.
What for?
What for?
To have excuse.
What for to have excuse, yes.
How does it help? It doesn't help at all. Because it takes one away from facing up to the reality or the truth, I think. But one could still say, one knows from people, one knows that, for example, when they are sick, there may be some connection by decisive support condition or something, that they may be more likely to be irritable at such times or something. So we say for others, oh, well, I understand because you're ill or something.
It's always planning. Planning, just planning to do. Just thinking.
Not understanding the reality.
But we can be understanding of other people because of the conditions that surround that person.
Yeah.
So it can be.
Yeah, but what citta is there?
Another person.
Whose citta again?
Yes.
One's own.
Okay, so it's my citta, not the understanding.
Say a bit more about that. You say it's my citta and it's not the metta, or I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. No, metta is wholesome or unwholesome. It's always me.
No, it's not really me.
Not the understanding of only citta is there.
Oh.
A moment of.
But it's possible there could be understanding arising, right understanding, with the metta.
Anytime.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Because you see that when we talk about understanding, we expect, you know, something, not reality right now.
Anjurin has a question, although I think I can answer it for him, just so I can tell him I asked you, which I suppose is some kind of metta in some limited form. Last week, it's just a story, of course, but there were moments of hearing of a very unpleasant sound, vipakam, through the ear door and through the nose door, because the asphalt machine, I'm sure my voice was a quite severe. And so realizing it's only sound, I think, to some extent, through the ear door and smell through the nose door, still conditioned to call the officials in town to ask them to come out to deal with the company next door. So he was quite angry, too, in between the moments of hearing and smelling, and consequently it has stopped. But he wanted me to ask you, is this going to cause him more akuzon vipak? Because he made the call, which if he hadn't made the call, it would be continuing now. And by making a call, because there are regulations about this, he had a positive result.
Can anyone know the past citta? What about his citta at that very moment when he's talking about it?
I said it seemed to me there are many moments involved in this story.
Well, it's always caught up by terms, ideas about this and that. But actually at this very moment, what type of citta? One will know better because it's now appear.
Further to my question too, if I say to him, so what was your... did at the moment when you made the phone call to request this? I mean, there are many moments there. There wasn't only one moment, and then he makes the phone call, and then there's some time later result. I mean, I don't know. I think his idea is he's going to have more akuson vipak as a result of calling about this.
And it's just like this moment. Six though is.
I'm sorry, I just want to get back to this Malukya Putta Bahia thing, because, I mean, we know from Malukya Putta that he was a great thinker, he was a speculator. I mean, he asked the Buddha all these questions about the origin of the universe and so on and so on, and if he didn't get the right answers he would leave the monkhood and so on and so forth. And then the Buddha gives him this advice, well, when hearing is only hearing and seeing is only hearing and thinking is only... Now, that to me implies that we have to keep jumping. We have somehow... I'm sorry I keep saying we, and I realise that I can't seem to disassociate the person from the... But in order to see visible objects as visible objects, the seeing is enough, and then we move to whatever other objects. And we must keep doing like this without any intermediate thinking, you know, in order to experience almost with bare awareness the present moment realities. That must take some training. It must take.
As there is no understanding about visual object right now, can there be the understanding of those moments which one thinks that one is moving from one doorway to another doorway?
Pass.
Maybe you're trying too hard.
I'm trying to understand. I'm just trying to get a grip on the very basic way of changing this whole twisted... I mean, I feel like there's a block of wood where my head used to be, you know.
Acharya, were you saying that with imagining situations when there's no understanding but now?
Because it's always conditioned to move away from understanding reality right now, not knowing what has arisen.
So do you think that with the development of right understanding that the thinking does start to change?
But thinking is not self.
But thinking is not self. Well, that's what I mean.
So how do you know?
Well, the understanding, the right understanding is then a condition for the thinking to change.
Without the moment of beginning to see the difference between visible object and seeing. Seeing so real, but there is no shape, no form, no smell. It arises, so it sees. like it arises and it thinks. It arises and it attached. Each reality has its own characteristic, its own function. Even right now, there can be some understanding or the development of understanding visible object. No expectation when I will understand it perfectly. But since one has heard a lot, it can be conditioned for not forgetting that now it's only that which can be seen.
The distinction between visible objects and seeing is just another way of saying the difference between nama and rupa, right?
It's easy to see.
I'm trying to see what this distinction is, because I'm aware that there's the eye, there's the visible object, and then there's the eye consciousness or seeing consciousness.
But at moment of saying, it's not the moment of understanding.
So the moment of seeing is just knowing that there's visible object.
Beginning to understand, just very gradual develop.
Not worrying about the seeing part of it. Perhaps that I was taking that to mean no perception in the sense of no sanya, in the sense of not labelling it as cup and saucer.
Sanya at every single moment.
I know.
So it's not a question, even an arahat knows this is a glass of water. It's not a question of not labelling, it's not a question of changing one's daily life or experiencing anything different. That was what I was saying at the beginning. Life carries on. One still crosses the road in busy traffic. One still labels this a glass of water. One still knows that this is Jonathan and this is Shakti. Life carries on just the same, but understanding develops. It knows that there are only different realities appearing, that there's no person, no glass. But these are just ideas we have.
Because, you know, when Ajahn says that there's just colour, you know, I'm thinking, well, maybe I should, you know, change the way I look at the thing.
But that's again because the idea of self is so strongly rooted there. And as we said the other day, it's not English self or Thai self. This is the way things are in samsara. There's always whatever we read in the Tipitaka can be read with an idea of self trying to do something. The Buddha said the teachings were very subtle and profound. If it was just a matter of trying to look and find colour, there's nothing subtle or profound about that.
But I suppose when we have the idea of trying to look at things in a different way, that is another kind of reality that arises.
At that very moment of trying to see, to look, is that the understanding?
Not understanding, but it's real, isn't it?
It's a reality.
So it could be object of understanding, if there was
understanding. Anything can be object of understanding.
And I think you would say we don't have to label what kind of reality it is.
Like now, are you labelling?
I'm tempted to label.
Everything here? The light, the fan, everything?
Well, I mean in terms of Dhammas.
It's kind of automatic that when I look at that, you know, I don't have to say it's a fan, but I know it's a fan. I mean, it's simultaneous. The idea is along with the...
But without the seeing itself, there can't be the idea of fan. Without visible object, there can't be the idea of fan, but neither can there be fan without seeing. So the reality of seeing is also there. And the Panya can know any reality.
That was a good explanation.
I don't know why I'm finding it so complicated. That seemed, for a brief moment, that seemed to be really simple. But maybe I need a frontal lobotomy or something to stop this thinking.
Also, it must be stressed that thinking is real. The thinking follows every sense of experiences. So when you are, for example, trying to look hard or note thinking is arising, and that may be the object of understanding. While you're so keen in understanding visible object, you miss knowing thinking. Actually, you don't know anything, but thinking is the reality at that moment.
Well, what you refer to as all this thinking is itself a kind of reality.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can be the object of understanding too.
And it's where I think most of us spend most of our kind of time is in some level of thought, you know.
But it's not a matter of having to choose one particular object.
Okay, I am gaining ground. I am beginning to make sense of it, but it's not easy. I don't know why. It's not easy.
I think sometimes we so much of the time try to get it. Like you said, on some levels it's simple, but very deep, very profound.
And what is avijja? Avijja. We can call it, we can say avijja, but where is it? When does it appear or come or arise?
No, again.
Not knowing. Avijja cannot know that it's avijja. It cannot understand reality. That which cannot understand is avijja. As long as it is avijja, it can never understand at all.
So panya is that which understands.
Yeah, opposite.
Mm-hmm. So much of the time we're like the dog chasing our tail, going around and around trying to get the essence somehow. We have to run to get the understanding.
And always no attention to reality right now. Yeah.
Forget about reality.
And that is avijja and attachment, which leads it to other moment. So it's there, at that very moment of not understanding reality right now, it's avijja.
So again, it's just hearing the teachings, considering, discussing.
Dhammas develop, not anyone develops at all. Sati, ahirika, Hiri, Otapa, and all wholesome realities just arise and develops with right understanding.
Can I just come back to a question relating to the earlier one about Sila and the precepts and the aspect of all the precepts as non-harming? One knows that any breaking of the precepts harms other people, so the observance of the precepts is an observance of non-harming. And in India we were referring to the first precept of killing as being the most harmful, and there was a comment made about any kind of harming or intention to harm anyone is actually included in this precept. Can you say a little
more? Not to that degree of killing.
Not to that degree.
Same reality, which is dosa.
Okay, so this is what was meant. It's the same reality, even if it's not to that degree. But I thought the comment you made, which was something I hadn't heard, was that the precept included not just the killing, but any intention to harm. But you meant the
chitta. Deeds and action conditioned by akusala.
And also, perhaps just following on from that, the precept about abstaining from the taking of intoxicants. With the other breaking of the precepts, it's easy to see how there is an intention to harm involved. But many people would say, oh, when they have a drink or two, there's no intention to harm others. Can you
What about cetana cetasika, which arises with each citta?
Well, the intention, of course, can be kusala or akusala, and of course when there's the intention to take any intoxicant, okay, it's akusala, but can one say then it is harming others in the sense that any akusala is harming?
When it comes to that degree.
And can one also say this is why a sotapanna would never have such intention to break the precepts, because there'd never be the intention to harm others to that extent?
It seems like rules, but by the difference of citta and cetasika, we can see which is as dangerous as that degree.
I'm not sure I understand. You said taking of intoxicants can harm someone else. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that more?
I think that on newspaper a lot.
And what?
Newspaper.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, you know, most of the army in Iraq and certainly Northern Ireland were taking amphetamines and all kinds of drugs. Mm. But my main understanding for the fifth precept was that once somebody becomes intoxicated, it's very easy to break the other four, you know? And so I saw that as probably, and I mean, every time we break a precept, every time we get angry, I mean, it's us that suffer first, you know. It's like the Buddha said, it's like picking up a handful of fire, you know. He says if somebody's angry with you and you get angry back at them, you're twice as much at fault as the person that got angry with you. You know, it's like, and you're harming yourself. It's unavoidable that we do damage to not only other people, but to ourselves when we break precepts.
So it makes me think of an addict, for example, who is a kusala vipaka, that they have this situation with addiction, and so then they maybe quit doing drugs or alcohol for some time, and then again they go back and again and again, and you see it with addicts, they don't stop. It maybe for a week they go through rehab, or a month or a year, but it continually draws them back. So then how do we understand rehab, or even the sense of we try to practice by not taking drugs or taking the alcohol?
So what should be known first?
Understanding. Mm-hmm. Without understanding, there's no possible break from the addiction. Rehab does. Sometimes it works for some people. So is that then
temporary?
Even maybe. Maybe another life, it's back again.
The tendency is still there.
The latent tendency is still there. So it's only by the understanding then. And again, through all the doorways, understanding of all the doorways.
Earlier we were talking about metta versus the opposite of metta, anger, dosa and adosa. But I think that with both the concern or the consideration is for others, not for oneself. So just as one sees the benefit of metta because one sees the value of treating others kindly and pleasantly, and one understands that this is kusala, and so also with anger or annoyance, one knows no one likes to hear or receive these things. So again, one's concern is with the others. One knows it's a kusala, because otherwise if one's just thinking for oneself, oh, I want to have more metta, or I don't want to have so much dosa because it's bad for me, again, it's not really appreciating the kusala aspect. It's thinking of oneself again.
Yeah, except to say, although this doesn't arise in the Metta Sutta, most people who teach metta, they always say the benefits of practicing metta are you have peaceful sleep, you're protected from harm and so on and so forth, and the mind is peaceful and settled and so on. So although it doesn't actually specify these benefits within the sutra itself, I don't know whether it's in the commentaries, because I'm not an expert of commentaries, but teachers always seem to add these benefits that arise from, and they always seem benefits to I or to the person.
Isn't it true that when one is friendly and kind and considerate, one sleeps well and one's undisturbed by how others behave and life runs very smoothly? So it's true, but the reason for being friendly or considerate to others, it's not so that I will sleep well at night and
I will
be undisturbed.
Okay, it's a byproduct. Yeah.
The purpose of having metta is because it's a wholesome quality and everyone would like to hear kind words or listen to friendly speech. So one has the other's benefit at heart.
That's also a condition for other metta.
Mm. Yes.
For more metta to arise. For instance, one's kindness to person A might engender conditions for person A to do some metta somewhere.
Yeah,
the development of jhana or samatha, a hindrance to the development of satipatthana.
What's the purpose of developing samatha?
Calm, for calmness.
No, understanding about reality right now.
Yeah. So you're saying yes, it is a hindrance?
What is real is real. Like, metta is real.
Yes.
But who knows that metta is wholesome? It has to be panya.
Yes.
So panya knows everything correctly.
Yes.
Like, samatha is calm. It's not a kusala, but it cannot understand reality as it is.
Mm. Yeah, this little conversation came up between Jill and I yesterday. It was really her question, but I realised it then became mine because I didn't know. I feel it's not necessarily a hindrance to satipatthana. If there is wisdom growing, it can see the moments of samatha, calm,
kusala is kusala, all kinds of kusala,
yeah.
And a kusala is a kusala. Mm-hmm. But what kind of kusala will develop understanding about realities?
Satipatthana, yes.
Do you think that this is just by the by, and that the important thing is just to simply develop panya without any kind of formal, any kind of structured exercise or whatever.
Please tell me about that, the structured exercise.
I don't know, because I've never practiced samatha and it was something I was wrestling with in recent weeks, perhaps that was a necessary thing to do in order to be able to hasten up the arising of panya.
Again, one is doing, but I know the when I talk to my son about this, he always says the practice of samatha is a condition for the arising of satipatthana. Could you comment on that?
Without understanding, can we know whether it's calm or not calm? We just use the term samatha, the development of samatha. But all kinds of kusala is calm.
Mm-hmm. All kinds of kusala.
Yes, because all kusala moments are calm. Opposite of akusala moments. So it's the degree of calmness when it's small, stronger, up to the degree that it can be the first jhana. But it's not easy at all. But even so, there is no understanding of no self. So what's the use of being born in the Arupa Brahma? No understanding at all about realities. Because that level is so much higher than just a momentary calmness that one likes to have it.
In the Arupa,
Dhamma.
In the Arupa, if you're reborn in the Arupa world, as far as my understanding goes, you can't, you have no ability to hear a Dhamma.
No understanding about realities.
You have no ears, no eyes. It's just mind, and so there's no.
It's so very calm.
It's a very calm.
Yes. Needs to be for billions of years or whatever.
Also, isn't jhana the hindrances are suppressed because of the arising of jhana? And once it's out of jhana, the hindrances are back.
Let's talk about the truth that all akusala are useless, it's harmful. And all kinds of kusala must be beneficial,
yes.
Wholesome, yeah. Not harmful at all, no matter what degree. But what kind of kusala will lead to the understanding of reality right now?
Mm-hmm.
So what?
Many people have this idea that the hindrances are suppressed. And what because
hindrance? What kind of hindrance? According to Nivarana,
yeah.
Jhana can suppress Nivarana, but no understanding. Mm-hmm. So we cannot say that jhana is wrong or jhana is harmful, but jhana is kusala at level of not understanding reality as it is.
So what kind of kusala is it?
Calm. Just calm.
So why is it considered kusala? Just because it's calm?
It's calm with wholesome jetasikas. No lobha, no dosa. Because all kinds of kusala are calm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No matter at moment of dana is calm, at moment of sila, at moment of any level must be calm.
Why are there so many suttas, especially in Majjhima Nikaya, on jhana, and you have the Anapanasati Sutta and so on? The Buddha seemed to consider that jhana was quite important. Yeah?
To understand reality or what?
Well, he seemed to think it was beneficial, or that's the understanding I get, that it was beneficial. I'm not sure.
And, excuse me, to whom did he speak to?
Monks.
What kind of monks?
Monks who were
meditating. Yeah, meditating.
Monks who had developed what kind of kusala? Mm-hmm.
I think where people trip up a bit is because the hindrances are said to be hindrances to the development of insight.
What about the 10 Palibodha? Only the last one hinders the intention to have power or itirite.
Sorry, I missed that again. What about the hindrances of...
The last Palibodha. There are 10 Palibodha. And what's the 10th? Desire to have power by gaining jhana to that degree. Mm. No understanding about reality right then because of the intention to develop iti, miracles. Mm.
Well, isn't that
agusa,
that desire?
No. It's wholesome, but it cannot have understanding. Mm. Because satipatthana can have anything as its object.
Yeah.
But when there is such intention to have miracle, then that person tries so hard to have it. With the development of jhana, no time for satipatthana to arise. Yeah. No conditions for satipatthana to arise.
How does that relate to what you usually say, that the only hindrance for the development of right understanding is wrong view or ignorance? Because this is not
at
the
that
wrong
moment
view or
is
ignorance.
at that moment there is no understanding about the value of understanding reality right then.
But it's not ignorance, because it's...
But it's there.
It's there.
When there is intention, a purpose or desire to have miracles.
But during anapanasati, you say if it's kusala, because there's no lopa and dosa, but there's moha.
No moha at all. When all kinds of kusala.
So if there's no moha, can then
cannot have moha jetasika arising.
Okay, but if there's... So moha jetasika is arising
when akusala jitta.
No, I mean when somebody's doing anapanasati.
It's kusala jitta.
Yes, but and if there's no moha arising at the moment for somebody who's doing anapanasati, can we not say that there might be some wisdom if there's no moha arising?
Okay, when it's dana, there can be kusala jetasikas with apanya.
Mm-hmm.
But for the developments of samatha or vipassana, there must be panya. Otherwise, who knows that at that moment it is kusala citta or nivarana or akusala citta.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it needs panya to see and understand what moment is kusala and what moment is akusala, so that the kusala moments can develop. Otherwise, one might mistake akusala for kusala, so kusala moment cannot develop at all.
Are you equating samatha with anapanasati?
Any kind of samatha must have panya. So when you have intention just to fix the mind on some object without understanding, that is not kusala and it's not panya at all. It's only lopa.
So what panya is that called? Like we call the panya of the we call the panya of the deva of vipassana, like satipatthana. This other panya is not satipatthana.
Samatha is so also panya, a level panya of panya. Kammasakata panya is also panya. So all kinds of right understanding.
At, where I was coming from was the fact that so many 20th century so-called masters said that jhana was not important, that kanika samadhi momentary concentration was enough. And my experience has been that it certainly isn't, and doesn't lead to any kind of or very low wisdom, but it doesn't actually seem to achieve very much. And in fact, if anything, the kilesa have become even stronger, or the defilements become stronger and overpower the mind even more than perhaps normally.
I think that it's because the lack of understanding what is what. Like samatha, it's moment of kusala. So without sampajanya, right awareness at level of samatha, how can there be the understanding of citta at that very moment, whether it is kusala or akusala? Because we can simply say that, oh, it's akusala to kill, it's akusala to steal, it's akusala such and such. But it's only talking about akusala, but not the understanding of the precise, exact moment of akusala which is there. But when it's the development of samatha or vipassana, it needs sampajanya, which can understand citta at that very moment. And that understanding is panya, sampajanya is panya, which can see the difference between akusala citta and kusala citta. Otherwise, samatha cannot develop at all.
Like what you described, Betty, about focusing on the breath. Of course, if it's anapanasati that we read about in the suttas, it's kusala, but when it's just we go and focus on the breath, this isn't samatha.
Well,
no understanding.
That was my experience also, many years of doing that, and because there was no teaching of Dhamma at all. It was just, okay, go sit. And it makes calm, blah, 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 blah. And that's why years ago, I mean, I stopped doing it because it didn't do anything. Because there was no teaching of Dhamma. But if one was doing that, and there was teaching of the correct, the real Dhamma at the same time, what then would be, what then would be?
Before the time of the Buddha, people did a lot of samatha.
Right, I know that.
But when it's time to understand reality, what reality is now, you don't have to wait until citta is calm.
I'm saying for those people who teach about that, you know, they'll say, all right, we do anapanasati in the morning from 10 to 12, and then we have Dhamma discussion from 2 to 3,
But did you get any understanding from that? What samatha is, and the sati sampajanya at moment of being aware of breath, kusala citta, or just intention with lopa, to know something which is not panya at all. Because panya has different function from attachment. The function is of panya is detachment.
Quick question about the hindrances with regard to insights. The only hindrance is ignorance, but when we read in a sutta about, for example, the five hindrances, like when one's overwhelmed by sensual desire, overwhelmed by ill will or whatever, I think here it's just pointing out that panya cannot arise at moments of lobha dosa and so on. So it seems that there are two senses. In one sense, there is no real hindrance to the development of satipatthana, because any reality, even lobha, dosa, moha, can be objects of right understanding. But in the other sense, the Buddha talked about these hindrances as being hindrances in the sense of pointing out that panya cannot arise when akusala arises.
The answer is when there's no conditions.
When there are no conditions, right, yes.
Just to check this one to its conclusion. On the night of the Buddha's enlightenment, he had been practicing anapanasati, and then, well, allegorically, I imagine, all these dancing women appeared, and then bolts of lightning or fireballs were hurled at him and so on. He started to experience all the different kilesa that were present in the mind. But he had gained a level of tranquility and calmness which allowed him to observe this phenomena rather than being involved with it. No? Yes? Sorry. Is that a correct understanding of...
Was the Buddha only one who developed samatha?
No.
So what about the others? What about conditions for any time to arise? For each different ones.
But was he not providing also a model?
Buddha was Buddha. The other arahata, it was other arahata.
But I mean, I've been staring at this cup on and off all
Yeah, but if we could all stare at that, we'd not get anywhere. We're still quite ignorant of it.